Hey there, folks. Welcome into this Monday edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. I'll be joined in just a little bit by Craig Burley and Jan Agafjortov. We'll discuss Jadon Sancho, a potential move away from Borussia Dortmund. After that, we'll hear from Shaka Hislop and Mark Ogden. Is it time for the David De Gea era at Old Trafford to end? Plus, it's German Cup semifinal week, but we begin the show with the biggest news out of Europe all weekend. Timo Werner's looming move from RB Leipzig to Chelsea. And apparently not everyone's a fan. Here's what Liverpool legend Robbie Fowler had to say about the move. We should probably acknowledge Liverpool, the team Chelsea beat out for Werner's signature. Quote, I've heard the noise surrounding Timo Werner in recent weeks, but I'm not a big fan. There are things about his game I like and admire, but does he influence games consistently enough? Not for me. I've heard so many people complaining about Liverpool owners not splashing the cash, not diving in on Werner when he's a steal at £52 million. Is he really, though? I'm not saying Werner is a flat-track bully, but I do think there are clear doubts. If Liverpool value a player as essential, they will pay the premium, as they did for Virgil van Dijk and Alisson. All right, Jan, clear doubts about Timo Werner. Do you share any of those clear doubts?
Not at all. I respect Robbie Fowler as a great goal-getter, and he will know a good striker when he sees one. But I don't think you have seen enough of Timo Werner. I think that the main thing for Liverpool fans is that Jurgen Klopp, he was desperate to get Timo Werner, and he couldn't get him. And because of the financial things, because of Corona, because of loss of income and so on. No, I don't agree with Robbie Fowler, not at all. I agree with the Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp, who wanted this player and is not happy that he is on his way to Chelsea Football Club.
Craig, Fowler says that Werner's not at the level of Liverpool's top three. Is he wrong?
Well, Jurgen Klopp, as Jan said, thought he was good enough to add to that front three, making it a flexible front four when he was rotating. Listen, dare I say it, if Timo Werner had a sign for Liverpool, I'm sure Robbie Fowler had been saying it's a great signing. Liverpool were prepared to pay the money pre-pandemic. But as Jan said, the focus has shifted because the finances have changed and he's deemed a non-essential player now because they have players in that position. Listen, front guys generally don't influence games. They get goals, they get headlines, they grab the stories. You look at Mo Salah, who's grabbed headline after headline in the last couple of years. You watch him in games, he does so many bad things during the game, it's frustrating. And then he pops up and does something magical. A moment of genius. And that's what you get with these front guys. They generally don't dominate games, apart from the likes of Lionel Messi, who's in a different stratosphere. So, you know, Timo Werner has already proven himself as a quality international player and a guy who would have been a great addition to Liverpool. And that's why Chelsea have stepped up to the plate, because they realise they've got an opportunity and they're going to go for it.
And I think as well, this is great business of Chelsea Football Club, because they waited a year. They've given their young players a chance, fair enough, and some of them develop into very good players. But listen, this is a perfect move for Chelsea. They get a player for €55 million. They get a player that they know will score goals for them. And on the other hand, and just to add to what Craig said, maybe there was a plan for Liverpool to sell one of those top three to one of the big clubs in Spain, and maybe the virus made them not get that price either. To sell one of them for 100 and get Timo Werner for 50 would be good business for them, and they choose not to. And all the best, Chelsea, if you've done good business.
Craig, the other side of this is the players who are at Chelsea. What do you think if you're Tammy Abraham? Is there an opportunity for this player to play alongside Timo Werner? Or do you see what was discussed on the other show? If Werner comes, it's tough luck for Abraham.
Well, listen, Tammy Abraham is a young man who has, I think, done particularly well, stepping up to lead the line in a side gone for the Champions League places in the Premier League from the Championship where he was playing on loan. Look, you're at one of the big clubs. He's not a stupid young man. He knows Frank Lampard's going to go and try and bring players in. He knows it's going to be a squad game. But Tammy Abraham offers something different. Clearly, there's a difference in physicality between Timo Werner and Tammy Abraham. So there's a different side to the game there. Frank Lampard may decide to play two up front on the odd occasion. And it's going to be about squad rotation. We've talked about this with Pulisic and other players. You know, they've got so many young, talented players in forward positions that you're going to have to fight for your place. And that's just a fact of life when you're at one of the big clubs around Europe.
Jan, what do you think his best position will be in the Premier League? Up top or out wide?
Well, first of all, I see a lot of the expert in England and some other countries as well. They haven't seen a lot of Timo Werner this season, because what Julian Nagelsmann has done at RB Leipzig this year, he kind of made him into he can play wide, he can play behind the strikers, he can just walk, run around and just take the ball when he wants to take the ball, more like a playmaker position. If you saw the game against Tottenham, it was so deep, the Tottenham defenders didn't know how to cope with him. And I agree with Craig, this is top clubs of Europe. And I had a look, because I knew we would probably talk about this, and I had a look at the goals that the strikers for Chelsea got this season. Yes, Tammy Abraham got 13, and the rest of it is nothing. So if Chelsea got an ambition to be top four, I'm not even start talking about winning titles, they need players to score goals. It's not good enough. I mean, it's nothing to do with youth, there's nothing to do with a World Cup winner, Giroud. You have to score goals, you need goals, and then you have to bring in people who can score goals. That simple. That simple it is in top sport.
All right, gentlemen, let's switch gears, although not that much, discussing Jadon Sancho, who the other day on the show received quite a bit of criticism, and it was along the same lines of inconsistency, especially Frank Leboeuf was particularly harsh on the young player. Jan, you watch as much of Jadon Sancho as anybody else. Is the knock on his consistency fair?
Well, I followed Erling Haaland's first games. I saw 10 or 12 live games of Dortmund. Yes, I talked a lot about Erling Haaland. But the best player nearly every game I saw was Jadon Sancho. I heard Leboeuf's comments and I heard some of the other boys on that show saying that he wasn't inconsistent. I 100% disagree. 100% disagree. This guy, he is 20. He got 28 games this season, 17 goals, 16 assists. Last year, he was 18, 19, 34, 12, 14 was his numbers. And they were talking about this guy not having an end product. Hello, hello, hello.
Craig, whose side are you on?
I think Frank Leboeuf, this lockdown has affected Frank more than anybody, because on Friday, he was talking about, it's not fair that Liverpool said they were going to sign Timo Werner and now they're not going to do it because of the finances. It's not fair. When's anything ever fair in football? This is business. Look, Jan just put the numbers out. I looked at it as well. 19 goals this season in all competitions. He's just come off the back of being a teenager. He's 20 years old now. Lucien Favre wouldn't agree with it. Gareth Southgate wouldn't agree with it. He's a fantastic young talent. That's why almost all of Europe are chasing him. Do you want always a little bit more from players? Yeah, you do, but he's a young man. And I'm reticent to criticise, and I don't even think there's anything there to criticise him for, but I'm reticent to criticise players so young with so much talent unless they do something stupid. Jadon Sancho would get into most top teams around Europe. And here's the thing, he's still developing. So if he's getting 13, 14 goals last year, if he's going to end up this season potentially with over 20 goals, what's he going to be like in 2, 3, 4, 5 years? That's why clubs, particularly Man United has been touted, are prepared to pay around 100 million for him, because they're buying into a decade worth of talent going forward.
Yanni's been fined by the DFL for breaking quarantine rules. It's not the first off-field issue that he's had in his young career. Is that in any way a part of his reputation in Germany, and could it hinder a move, do you think, to a bigger club?
Not at all. He was laid back from England. He made a picture of a golden steak at his holiday. He had a hairdresser thing going, and they didn't use the mask or all the protections. So, yeah, this is what you will get from a 19, 20-year-old. Not even will he develop on the pitch, he will also develop off the pitch. And we will see a Jadon Sancho in the future. This will be one of the best players in the world. He is one of the best players known in the German League. We know how good the German League is at the moment. For a club, for example, like Manchester United, who at this stage, they're a global brand without one global player. They have one global player, and he is well known at the moment because he's not playing games, Paul Pogba. They would have been desperate to get him. I reckon this will be the biggest transfer in the summer. This all clubs will find money if they can get Jadon Sancho. This is a superstar in making, and okay, he's delayed, he's coming late to some meetings, so be it. He will score you, he will do you 35, 40 scoring points, and then his hairdresser should be forgiven.
Craig, Emre Can said that Sancho needs a little bit of guidance. If you're talking about a 100 million euro transfer fee, would you be nervous about spending that on a guy that needs a little guidance?
No, I think every player needs a bit of guidance. You look at the guidance that Erling Haaland has had and making the right moves at the right time. He got the right guidance, and it was to go to Dortmund to get playing time. And I think every player needs somebody behind them, whether it's family or a good representative, that's just going to, you know, tap them on the shoulder now and again and say, listen, I think you should keep your head down for a bit, or I think you should do this or do that. I reiterate, whoever buys Jadon Sancho is buying into 10 years or plus, if he's injury-free, of performances. And then it's up to the player himself. So you look at today's crazy market, you know, 100 million is not really a lot, although it sounds a lot. It's not in today's crazy market. But then again, you know, this pandemic may slightly reduce that fee. Who knows? But I certainly don't buy into Jadon Sancho is going to be a problem for anybody. The only problem that it's going to have with Jadon Sancho is the players that are going to have to play against him in the next few years.
Very well. We've been talking a lot on this show about crowd noise of late. Some people like it, some people don't. Jan, you've definitely been in the don't camp. Recently, though, Tom Hamilton wrote on our website about just how they are doing the actual pumping in of that noise. And then we've also had some comments from guys like Don and Frank about what they think of the latest technological innovations.
I thought it was brilliant. People might have thought it was a gimmick a couple of weeks ago, but I tell you, when I was watching the game indoors, I had it turned up. There was a few little funnies where I thought when the referee was waiting on a decision on VAR, someone in the sound booth pressed the whistles and everyone was whistling inside the stadium. When the referee made a bad call, there's a few little boos going on. So it all added to the atmosphere, and I thought it was really, really good. It was the first time I saw that.
I think it was enjoyable, and I really thought it was a real football game. And I talked to those journalists, they say, no, it's not the truth. You know, if the truth is silent, you have to show the sign. I say, wow, come on. You were so picky. That made me, again, forget about the absence of the fans. So it's a good thing. It's a very good thing, and I enjoyed it.
Okay, Jan, another chance for you to disagree with Frank. I don't know. Is it growing on you?
Oh, I have a terrible show today. I'm against everything that's been said and done, and I'm still against it. I think that the sound of silence just shows us how important the fans are. You're getting used to it. There was a penalty this week in the Bundesliga where the guy said he heard so many noises from the players that he missed the goal. But now I even did saw Dirty Harry today. I just made a clip and sent it to the producer to just show it. When Clint Eastwood comes in and he's saying there's too much sugar in my cup, and he said there's too viel Zucker in my top. So no, this is fake. Sorry, World Cup champion Frank Leboeuf again.
Craig, come on, talk Jan into this. It's so much better with the crowd noise, right?
No. Jan's not going to change his mind. He's not. No, even if Clint Eastwood said change his mind, he's not going to change his mind. Listen, let me tell you something. I can't bear any more silence. I'm getting all the silence I need at home because the message is not talking to me. So I'll take any kind of noise at the moment. So I don't mind it. I saw a game the other day where I think they didn't pipe the noise in, or it was very low in the mix, and I just didn't like it. I'll take it. As I said a week or two ago, I'll just take anything to take the edge off it. But I hope we can get to a stage soon where we can at least have some fans back in these grounds. I know it's not going to be full capacity, but I hope we get to a stage very, very soon that we can at least start having some fans back in with social distancing and guidelines. I think that will be a start.
Craig Burley says he'll take any noise. What about this noise? The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. It features, surprise, surprise, Jan Argafjortoff.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Make sure to check out ESPN FC's YouTube channel. Great conversation over there right now. Mark Ogden and Kay Murray discussing David De Gea. Not only apparently is he holding Manchester United back, Mark says he's outdated as a goalie. The aforementioned Mark Ogden joins us now. So does Shaka Hislop. Gentlemen, great to be with you. All right, Mark, how is he outdated and why is he holding Manchester United back? Explain.
Well, I think for when you look at the goalkeepers now, you look at if you had to pick the best keepers in the world right now, I think you'd look at people like Alisson Becker, Ederson at Man City, Ter Stegen at Barcelona, Manuel Neuer. All these guys are what you call sweeper keepers. They, you know, they become an additional attacking outlet for their teams, and they can sweep up danger, stop attacks happening. I was at Tottenham last season. I basically watched Alisson Becker when Liverpool were attacking, and he was basically stood outside the centre circle of the Liverpool half because that is how advanced he stands. Now, David De Gea, if you watch him, he hardly ever leaves his penalty area. And for me, when I say he's outdated, is that he hasn't got that ability or that desire to be a sweeper keeper. So the reason why it's hurting Man United, I feel, is that, don't get me wrong, he's still a great shot stopper, one of the most, you know, athletic and agile keepers in the world. But, you know, when you have a goalkeeper that won't come out of his penalty area and sometimes doesn't come off out of his six-yard box, your defenders have to drop deeper. So if your defenders are dropping deeper to protect that space, they're inviting the opposition on. So I think United will benefit from playing a higher line. And sometimes when Sergio Romero plays, he gives them that advantage to play higher up the pitch. And look, when Romero played against weaker opposition, we know that. But his record is much more successful than De Gea's in terms of win ratio. I just think United would benefit if De Gea either modernised his game to become more like Alisson or Ederson, or United looked around and decided that, you know, great keeper that you have been, David De Gea, but you're no longer a keeper for, you know, this decade, the 2020s, shall we say.
Shaka, outdated sounds harsh for a goalie we used to talk about, one of the best in the world. Is it accurate, though?
Now that I hear Mark explain it, absolutely yes. I think the challenge to that, though, is you're most effective as that sweeper keeper when you've got a defence kind of built around that side of your game. And I'm not sure, I'll be honest, I'm not sure this Manchester United defence is built around any kind of goalkeeping game, in all honesty. So it becomes a challenge. But he can't change. I don't see how a goalkeeper at De Gea's age, as long as he's been involved in the game, as much success as he's had, you don't reinvent yourself now. And that's a challenge for both De Gea and Manchester United.
Mark, what about Dean Henderson having a great season at Sheffield United, the Manchester United loanees, just 23 years old? Is there any possibility that Manchester United could move away from De Gea to Henderson, who they've got waiting in the wings next season?
No, I think next season's too early, and I think all parties involved actually accept that. I think United realise they've got a real talent on the hands in Dean Henderson, but there's also the reality that he's not played a full Premier League season yet, and he's only 23, so I don't understand this rush to get Dean Henderson in the goal at Old Trafford, because as we've seen, as a Shaq will attest, goalkeepers do get better with age. They understand the game better. And, you know, De Gea only signed a new long-term contract not so long ago. So I don't think De Gea should be, you know, get rid of straight away. I think that De Gea still has something about him, but like Shaka says, he's at an age where he might not reinvent his game. But I do think it's too early for a goalkeeper like Dean Henderson to be the first team keeper at Man United, a club with all that massive expectation and pressure. We all saw that the criticism he got after he let that mistake in against Liverpool for Sheffield United earlier this season, that's the kind of scrutiny that he got that day, he gets every single time he plays for Man United. And at 23, I don't think he's ready for it yet. I still think that he's going to make mistakes. So make those mistakes away from that glare of the spotlight at Old Trafford and come back in a year's time when maybe he could be England's goalkeeper at the Euros. If he's established himself there, then I think Man United have got a much more difficult decision next year in 12 months' time. But right now, it suits everybody, I think, that Dean Henderson goes on loan again next season.
Shaka, just the other day on Extra Time, you were saying now is the time for Henderson to take over the number one. Why?
Because I don't think Manchester United have an awful lot to lose. And listen, I accept, as we sit right now, we're still not quite sure what's going to happen between now and the start of next season, how Manchester United are going to strengthen, how different they're going to look, how much closer they will be to not just the top two, but if, for argument's sake, Chelsea continues as they have been, do they put more distance between themselves? it might be an opportunity to give to throw Henderson in at the deep end and let him do what I think he's shown he can do best. I think the other challenge of that is, given the successes that Henderson has had at Sheffield United, is he going to be just happy going out alone? Or does he want to be showed and cash in on his value and be offered something a little bit more stable, a little bit more meaningful? That's a question for him as well. That I'm not sure how long he's willing just to wait for Manchester United to make up their minds on his future.
Mark, if Manchester United are going to move on from De Gea, what do you suppose the market is for this goalie?
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? I think you look around and financially it's going to be a problem to get him off the books, because he's on a lot of money in terms of wages, and they would command a high fee because he's only late 20s, early 30s, and he's got a long contract. So I think right now it's unrealistic to think that clubs will be able to buy him. And secondly, you know, Barcelona don't need him. Real Madrid have got Courtois. You know, Atletico Madrid could be an option going back to Atletico, because I think if United were said, look, you can have Jan Oblak in exchange for David De Gea, I think that would suit United down to the ground. Oblak's a fantastic goalkeeper. I think he's a step above David De Gea now. And De Gea back to Spain, back to Madrid. It's not the move to Real that he wanted 3 or 4 years ago, but he's an Atletico keeper from the past. I think Atletico could be the option. You know, PSG is another one as well, but again, you know, they seem to have moved away from De Gea a little bit. Juventus, they probably need a goalkeeper, because I'm not convinced about Wojciech Szczęsny. But same thing again, the wages, you know, will Juventus in this climate of financial hardship be willing to pay David De Gea a salary that could be approaching £300,000 a week, as well as the fee that comes with it? So I think he may have priced himself out of the market a little bit.
Shaq is just 29 years old. Are we giving up on David De Gea just a little bit too early here?
Ordinarily, I'd say yes. But I haven't seen anything from David here over the last couple of years to suggest to continue sticking with him. Listen, just before he signed that new long-term deal that Mark alluded to, and his form had started to dip desperately, and I thought it was a case of him kind of emotionally checking out of Old Trafford and wanted to move on. But then the offer came and he signed it, but his fortunes haven't really turned around. So now you're wondering, well, where's it all going wrong? And more to the point, how does he correct it? I'm not sure that he has the answers. And right now, as Mark was saying, probably the best option is to get rid of him, but you don't know who. Mark is saying Atletico Madrid and a straight swap with Oblak. But given his wages, I'm not sure who takes that kind of chance. And given how good Oblak is, I'm not sure why Atletico Madrid just go for a straight swap. There would be money involved when all of a sudden it becomes very expensive for a goalkeeper who hasn't showed any kind of reform that you would expect for at least 2 years.
Mark, real quick, let's change gears. Manchester United linked to seemingly everybody. Donny van de Beek, the latest. Number one team that seemed to always be linked with van de Beek was Real Madrid. Now it seems like Manchester United in the driver's seat. How realistic is that?
Well, it's a deal they've been looking at for quite a while, United. They were looking at van de Beek in January. I was told in January that they thought that they could have got two players out of Ajax. That one was Donny van de Beek and the other one was Hakim Ziyech. Now, obviously, Ziyech went to Chelsea, but Ajax, having been knocked out of the Champions League in the group stage, there was a feeling at United that they would be vulnerable to an offer for a player that, you know, in terms of market value, would be much more valuable or you know, make more sense than going for James Maddison or Jack Grealish. So there's an interest in van der Beek. It's long-standing, but there was also an acceptance at United that his favourite option was Real Madrid. Now, Real, it seems that they're going to be looking around to, you know, bring people back from loan, people like Martin Odegaard from loan. I don't think there's going to be a lot of money at Madrid to do this kind of deal for van der Beek. It's not going to cost a lot of money, but they may make one big signing this summer. It could be anyone. It could be Paul Pogba. I don't think it will be, but I think that if they're going to make a big signing, they can't be spending money on like tier two signings like van der Beek. So it's come back into United's kind of remit to go after van der Beek. And I think to look at the value that they will present, I think it'd be a good deal for United. So that's definitely one to watch.
Okay, Mark, real quick, tell us about this battle of leagues that we got going on over on the website. You are, I believe, the Premier League representative.
Absolutely. So it's the top leagues, top eight leagues in the world, represented on FIFA. So the correspondents on ESPN have all picked their teams, the representative teams from each division. I'm the manager of the Premier League, 23 players. there's a limit on players you could pick, so you could only pick as many as seven from the big team. So Liverpool, Man City, that was it. You couldn't fill a team for Liverpool and Man City players. And it's a case of taking on the other league. So in my group, I go up against Liga Mexico, the MLS, and Serie A. So I'm confident I can win this one. It's the Premier League, so you know they've got probably the best players, best array of talent in the world.
There you have it. Thank you, gentlemen. The Battle of the Leagues over on our website right now. The top eight leagues in the world going head-to-head in FIFA simulation. German Cup semifinals get underway Tuesday. FC Saarbrücken hosting Bayer Leverkusen in the first semifinal. Then Wednesday, Bayern Munich hosting Eintracht Frankfurt. Both those games, 2:30 Eastern. Both available on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. For a preview, we bring in Jan. Jan, let's start with FC Saarbrücken. This is a team from the fourth tier. How do they make it to the semifinals?
Well, they beat Köln, one Bundesliga team, then Düsseldorf in the quarterfinals, and now they are in the semifinals. And I feel sorry for them because this will be their great day. And of course, now they have to play behind closed doors. But mind you, this is, first of all, they got promotion. That is, they are in the third tier next season. And this is one of the founding fathers of the Bundesliga back in 63, being the first German team who beat Real Madrid. And also, I read some stats here, and they have never lost their home to Leverkusen, and all total, they just lost once in their lifetime against Leverkusen. And remember, Leverkusen is called Neverkusen because they can't win a title. So Saarbrücken will feel they have a chance Tuesday.
Neverkusen or not, surely Leverkusen, the huge favorites, yeah?
Yeah, unbelievable favorites, but you know how it is with the confidence you get when you knock out a team like Köln, when you knock out Düsseldorf on penalties, but it doesn't matter. That gives you a confidence. That gives you that extra. And Leverkusen, what you will have a Leverkusen team going there and just losing maybe 10% of their motivation or whatever attitude. And Saarbrücken, they know this is their big chance. I saw their CEO said this is like winning their a title of the World Cup for them going to a final. And can you imagine this feeling that maybe they can get a Bayern Munich in the final, Wir gehen nach Berlin, how they all singing in Germany. And we talk a lot about the English FA Cup, but slowly a great, great tradition in Germany also for the Cup, at least when they have a sellout in the capital of Germany.
You mentioned Wednesday's semi-final, Bayern Munich, Eintracht Frankfurt. Any hope for your old club?
Well, when we saw that Allianz Arena, the way they played Eintracht Frankfurt, not so much. And I also saw them now against Mainz. And thank God we won two away games against Werder Bremen and Wolfsburg. We'd be in big, big problem. But the interesting thing here is when we're talking cup and when we're talking Eintracht Frankfurt and Bayern, remember when Eintracht Frankfurt beat them in that magic final a couple of years ago? And also at the start of this season, Frankfurt beat Bayern Munich. Niko Kovac, their former coach, was fired by Bayern Munich. So I think this is the easiest game that Frankfurt will have all year. They have to go to Allianz Arena. This is just a bonus game for them. They're more or less safe now in the Bundesliga. So they just have to explore themselves. They knew they had no chance the last time they was there in the league. And there is some taste for cups in Frankfurt. We've seen that in the European League as well, but hope now is not a lot of hope, but still there is a hope.
Thanks, Jan. Playing more German football talk in today's edition of Extra Time. Jan joined by Craig Burley. Jeff Carlisle writing on our website right now, U.S. soccer reportedly considering repealing their policy that requires all national team players to stand during the national anthem. Of course, this policy put in place back in 2017 as a response to Megan Rapinoe, who was kneeling in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick and his protest of police brutality in 2016. For more on this, we bring in Shaka Hislop. Shaka, your response to this potential about face by the U.S. Soccer Federation?
Well, first off, beer on you. That's well done. I think it's I think it was needed. In my opinion, the policy was rather ridiculous just to begin with. Listen, I said at the time, it's a really bad idea to tell peaceful protesters how to protest, and to come out in the way that they did against Megan Rapinoe, and at the time was nothing more than populist. And now all of a sudden, you recognize the error of your ways. And as much as it may be four years overdue, at least you move in the right direction. From here, what I want to see is not just a repeal of that statute, but an explanation as to why it was there in the first place, or an apology, or tell us that you got it wrong and come good in that way. But just to simply repeal it and say, carry on as you like, I don't think heals the damage that was done in a meaningful enough way.
Shaka, we've seen it from FIFA, we've seen it from the Bundesliga, now potentially from U.S. soccer. Do you think we're entering a new era where athletes and especially footballers will be more likely to be heard from now that it's seemingly more acceptable?
Absolutely. I think we have a platform and we have to make good use of it. And especially in today's world where the politics is all about protectionism, to have athletes with as much to lose as they are speaking out only amplifies their message. I can't commend those athletes that have spoken out highly enough. Long may it continue. I continue to believe that sport, and in particular football, can lead the way in social change, meaningful social change.
Thanks, Jack. A quick reminder then, don't miss tomorrow's show. Dan Thomas is back as the boys get ready for the first of two German Cup semifinals, FC Saarbrücken and Bayer Leverkusen. All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks again to Shaka Hislop, Mark Ogden as well for stopping by. Now it's time for Extra Time. Your questions with Craig Burley and Jan Agafjortoft. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. We got Craig Burley, we got Jan Agafjortoft, and we have your questions submitted via the hashtag FC Extra Time. Boy, plenty of them to get to today. The first from Frank McManaman, one of the more popular Twitter accounts that we hear from in Extra Time. What are the best goals that each of you scored throughout your careers? Craig, you first.
Best or most important? I think the goal against Norway at the World Cup.
Best.
It was a goal against Rangers in the Old Firm game at Celtic Park. But I'd say the best goal that I scored was at Anfield at the Kop End for Chelsea. It was a left foot volley that beat David James and went into the top corner. And I actually scored twice in that game at the Kop End, once for Liverpool and once for Chelsea. So there you go. But I can remember Glenn Hoddle almost shouting for me not to shoot because it was so far out, but it just nestled in the top corner. So I was, and it was my left foot, so I was pretty happy with that.
Jan, best goal?
Well, best, most beautiful. Well, I think I would say my first goal in the Premiership. I was struggling for months, didn't score, and then we played Tottenham at home. Eric Thorstvedt, my teammate and roommate from the national team, was carried off. And I said to him when he was taken off, why do you go out, you fool? Because I'm about to score my first Premier League goal. No, Ian Walker came on. And then 2 minutes later, I chipped the ball over Colin Calderwood. I mean, my outside in the corner, my first Premier League goal. So I think I would go for that one.
Can Sheffield United qualified for the Champions League? Craig, what do you think?
Wow.
Currently seventh.
Yeah.
Five points back at Chelsea in fourth.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely, but not impossible. But I have to say, the way that Chris Wilder has moulded that team has just been incredible. I mean, primarily because most of the guys on that side have seen, you know, at least one level below the Premier League, if not two. And most of them have come up and played through the lower levels and have done an amazing job. I just feel that they'll come up just short. Maybe they'll get the Europa League at best, but I don't quite think they'll get the Champions League places.
Jan, next question for you. Does John Joe Kenny have a future at Schalke?
Shut up. You should have asked Jan that, because that's his former club.
I do my United live table always when United, Sheffield United are ahead of Manchester United. So I think they will go to the Champions League. And as we know, as we are speaking, there is a hearing in CAS where they have the appeal from Manchester City. So maybe the fifth position could be enough for the Champions League this season. And I agree with Craig. Chris Wilder has done a fantastic job. And he puts himself as an old-fashioned manager. This is a modern coach, and he's a great coach and doing wonders with my Sheffield United.
Very well. My apologies to all the Sheffield United fans offended that I forgot Jan's link. Does John Joe Kenny have a future there at Schalke? Jan, I think this one's for you as well.
Well, it's hard to say that any players at Schalke at the moment have a future at all, because how they're playing, they got a point this weekend. But I think Kenny is a good example of what we didn't understand could, or we didn't think will ever happen, that young talents from England will go to Germany and develop. So this has been a fantastic stage. We've talked about Sancho, how he has developed, and I think Gareth Southgate is, in general, got to be happy that the young players can go there. But I don't know his contract situation, but he got a good goal this weekend, which is good for his confidence, is good for his position. We'll see what Everton will do.
Craig, did you ever receive offers to play abroad in Italy, France, Spain or Germany?
No offers, no. I never got the opportunity to go abroad. It was just
there wasn't worldwide demand for your services.
No, just up and down, just north of the border and south of the border. I didn't want to travel too far.
Jan, did it make you nervous before playing for Swindon Town that you were their club record signing?
Well, my first game was a friendly against some pub team not far from Swindon, and after 2 minutes they were shouting, what a waste of money. So it got harder when I couldn't get that first goal. So I was doing all kind of stuff to try to get that goal, and at the end they had a fan sign in Swindon where there were two blank pages in the middle, and David Hay, who used to play for Celtic, was the assistant manager. The headline was, what has David Hay done for Swindon Town? Nothing on the first blank side, nothing on the second, and just with small print at his second page, they said he got Jan Fjotto to this club. So, yeah, I was down for a while.
Craig, did you wear a kilt at your wedding? And if so, did you wear it like a true Scotsman?
And the answer is no. And I don't think I would anyway wear it like a true Scotsman. Does that need an explanation to some people?
Is there a proper way to do it?
Let me just think about the right terminology here. It should only be the kilt that you're wearing. Do you get it?
Mm. Yep, gotcha. Gotcha, loud and clear.
That's why
anti-United.
That's why when you see Scotland fans going abroad, or have done before, to different countries to support the team, and I'm not generalising all of them here, but a lot of them wearing kilts and have too much to drink tend to start showing the locals that they are true Scotsmen. And it's a little embarrassing.
All right, our final question here. Frank, surely anti-United, how can he choose a trio of Ziyech, Pulisic and Werner ahead of Rashford, Anthony Martial and Jadon Sancho? Rashford and Sancho are better than Pulisic and Ziyech, and you can argue about Werner and Martial. Jan, you want the first crack at that? What do you think?
Well, it is Frank LeBeuf, I have to be aware now. But I think that what you see on social media at the moment, and even Robbie Fowler know that we are all jumping in on our team. So, I mean, that is a discussion without any answers. And I'm not sure who is anti or something, whatever. But I just know that the team you support, that's the best player ever. No, the Liverpool fans will say that Timo Werner is waste of money. And you see Manchester United fans, sometimes they hear about a player who is linked to the club, and they will say, this is the best player, never heard of him. This is just how it is. That's why we love football. That's why we can sit here and have our opinion. And the rest of the world watching, they will have all their opinions. So I will sit on the fence on that one, I think.
Craig, can you believe anyone would accuse this show of being anti-United?
Who was it who said it?
I know. They're complaining about Frank, but it could just as well be you or Stevie or Dan or anybody, really.
I really like
you weren't even listening to the question, I know.
No, I really like... Not really, I switched off. As soon as you start talking, Seb, I switch off. You know that. I was... I'm not the biggest Martial fan, I have to say. I think he's a super talent, but I think there's something for me, it's just my opinion, there's something just missing, and I'm not 100% where it is, whether it's attitude or the consistency or whatever. I'm a big fan of Rashford and I'm a big fan of Sancho, but I'm not entirely convinced that Martial will have the consistency to stay in that United side.
Oh, was that Manchester United? I thought it was Sheffield United. Okay, let's go on.
All right, boys, great stuff. We'll see you both back for tomorrow's show. Dan is back in the host chair. Plenty to discuss, including the German Cup semifinals, the first of which features a fourth-tier team, FC Saarbrücken.